Right, today is the 20th of February. I'm here with Professor Khan from the University of Dhaka in the Public Administration Department. Can I ask that you've given your consent for the interview before we start?
Yeah, I have my consent for you to take the interview.
Thank you very much. So I wonder if you could just briefly describe your position at the University of Dhaka. Your career path.
Okay, at the present time, I'm the senior-most professor at the University of Dhaka. Senior-most in terms of that nobody is senior than me at the University of Dhaka at the present time, because I was appointed to the post of professor in 1983 at the age of 32. So now I have reached a stage, in fact from July 1 this year, last year, I became the senior most professor of Dhaka University. So that alone gives me, of course, honor as well as certain privileges. Like membership to the Dhaka University Syndicate, which is the highest ranking decision-making authority, plus a part-time membership of the University Grants Commission, the regulating body that looks after the activities of both public and private universities, and an independent bungalow, which I have not as yet taken. In terms of my career, I did my honors in political science in 1968, and did my master's in public administration from the University of Dhaka. And I was in the first batch of public administration students because at that time it was opened. Then I joined University of Chittagong, the port city, in April 1970, as soon as my results were published. I got a first class in master's. And then after 3 months, I was appointed a lecturer in the Department of Political Science. Dhaka University. At that time, there was no Department of Public Administration. So after teaching there for 2 years, I went to USA on a Asia Foundation scholarship, and I went to Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs, Syracuse University, which was at that time the topmost school in public administration in USA. Today, even that is the case. So I finished my MPA from there by the end of 1973. So spring 74, I moved to University of Southern California, School of Public Administration, to do my PhD. 1976, I finished the requirements for a PhD as well as two masters again. So September 76, I came back, rejoined the Department of Public Administration, as my services were earlier transferred to that department way back in 72 when I was abroad. I was appointed assistant professor in 76, and then 78 I was appointed associate professor, and then professor in 1983. And I was also chairman of the Department of Public Administration from 1983 to 1986. I was a member of Bangladesh Public Service Commission, the constitutional body that you know that recruits civil servants from 1999 to 2004. In between, I taught at universities in USA, in fact, University of Southern California, I taught when I was a PhD student. Then universities in Jordan and Nigeria, and I did my postdoctoral work also at Cornell University as well as University of Texas at Austin. And I did, I was a Ford Foundation Fellow at the Institute of Southeast Asian Studies at in Singapore. In the meantime, I have written 16 books. Many of these have been published from abroad in the areas of governance, public sector reform, corruption, local government, rural development, all kinds of areas. You see, I write in many areas. And also so far, 185 of my articles and also chapters in 18 books have been published. Most of them from abroad, USA, UK, India, Singapore, Hong Kong, and many other countries. And I have been a consultant to World Bank, Asian Development Bank, and USAID, ILO, UA, and then UNDP. So, and I've traveled to many countries for conferences, congresses, seminars, symposia, presided over international meetings. And in fact, I may be going on sabbatical next year, and I'm in fact looking for opportunity to do some research abroad, mostly UA, especially USA, if that is possible. So that's about it.
So if we could talk a little bit about the civil service in Bangladesh, what are the major challenges facing the civil service at the moment?
You see, the challenges facing civil service in Bangladesh is basically to restore its credibility. In the public mind, the civil service does not have any credibility. There are many reasons for that. It has not really served the people at all well. You know. Secondly, there is corruption in the civil service, inefficiency, ineffectiveness. And these are all related to the failure of reform efforts in the civil service. If the civil services could be reformed in the way these have been suggested by both the government-appointed commissions and committees, as well as by donor-funded bodies like World Bank, UNDP, ADB, then I think civil service could have faced the challenges of the 21st century. It is highly centralized, elitist. It is a closed shop. It does not allow people to join at different levels. So it is, from my perspective, it is completely out of tune with the reality in Bangladesh. And the challenges it faces, as I said already, first is it lacks credibility. Second is, of course, it has not been able to grasp the reality at what it needs to do. It is still in the 30, 40 years behind. The way it works, the way it operates, you know, this structure that it retains, these are all basically relics of the past. Because if you look at the structure of the civil service, it's basically you have retained from the British time. And even after British rule of 90 years, then there was Pakistan rule for another 40-odd years. After even that, we have passed 37 years of independence. So you can calculate how many years. But nothing much has changed. There have been simply minor tinkerings. Little bit here, little bit there, disjointed efforts, which would not basically make the civil service to change its character. And unless you can do that, nothing is going to move much.
Why has it not been able to reform?
You see, it has not been able, it is a deliberate attempt. If you see, if you read my books, I have demonstrated quite clearly and convincing manner that by not reforming, the civil service had been able to retain its control and sort of enabled the politicians to depend on them more and more. And thirdly, they could survive and prosper without producing much. Now, why reform has not taken place is related issue. Number one, political commitment, as demonstrated by action, has not been there. All the political parties, top leaders, talk about reform. They have been talking about it ceaselessly from 1972 onwards, since independence. But no one can show any impact of those talks. Bodies, even government-appointed bodies, after bodies, came up with recommendations which are very radical in nature. That means these were in tune with the reality, but these were not implemented. Now, politicians feel comfortable, though they talk about reform, but they feel very comfortable by maintaining the status quo. And our civil servants are accustomed to do that because the way they are trained, they are not, basically, they are not trained to be reform-minded. They are very basically given very traditional type of training. They are not indoctrinated. They are not pro-reform-minded. They are not proactive. They are reactive. And as human beings are, they are very much, scared about change. The second reason, of course, as I'm saying, the resistance on the part of the civil servant, especially the top ones at the top of the civil service, especially belonging to the BCS administration cadre. They are basically the lineal descendants of the CSP, Civil Service of Pakistan, who are descendants of Indian civil service. So it's a continuation historical chain. Thirdly, of course, there has not been any reform movements in the way that has been the case in USA, if you remember, in the 1880s and all that. So there has not been pressure from outside for change. Especially our NGOs, our CBOs, that means those who are components of the civil society in Bangladesh. Civil society has done a lot of good things for Bangladesh, say in the area of poverty alleviation. But in this particular area, they have not done anything. They have not been able to organize any movement. There is no focus, there is no locus. And fourthly, though people complain bitterly about civil service inefficiency, corruption, mismanagement, but they have not been able to organize themselves also. And finally, excepting a few academics, I hasten to say I'm one of them, nobody really takes any interest in civil service reform.
What role have donors played in trying to get reforms implemented?
What, sorry?
What role have donors played, international donors played?
Donors, very unfortunately, I've shown it in that book, this one, Administrative Reform of Bangladesh. They've been very good in, taking people like us as consultants, giving us funds. They've been very forthcoming about those to reform, to start initiatives that would lead to reform. But unfortunately, when it came to implementation of such reforms, they were rather unsuccessful. And I think deliberately, because I told many donor communities representatives, including USAID head of mission here, World Bank chief, ADB chief, that, unless you put tremendous pressure on the government will not implement any of the reforms. So how you could do it? You tag in the reform with your assistance, which they have not done. I don't know why, but this has been my experience. The donors have been very good, very forthcoming. Even now these days, JICA is very interested in reform. KOICA, Korean International, they got defeat. But then, what they're good at is basically appointing people who could diagnose the problems. But we already know the problems. There are lots of works, even by me, there are lots of works on that line. But the question is, they are not playing that role when it comes to implementation of those reforms. And implementation of the reform is the most crucial stage, as you know. That's the Achilles heel. That means there, basically, everything stops. You form a committee or commission, they diagnose, they come up with, the recommendation. But the moment it comes to implementation, because then the vested interest is affected, and then, of course, you find all kinds of hurdles, unfortunately. So I believe donors' role should have been more proactive. They should have had more dialogue. They should have basically coerced, let me use a very strong word, to do that. Otherwise, it would not be effective at all. It would be simply and purely waste of money on the part of donors. Yes.
So there have been a number of reform committees formed.
And commissions.
The Mujeed Commission, the Nooran Nabi Committee.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
Park.
Many.
They've all made recommendations.
Yes.
What has happened to those recommendations?
Nothing much, because only day before yesterday I had a panel discussion with the former establishment secretary, who is now the rector of BPATC. And I asked him, what has happened to the recommendations of Public Administration Reform Commission, PARC, that was supposedly the latest, gave its recommendation 2000? He said, not much. We have changed forms, like from A4 to this. What kind of reform is this? And this is a very unfortunate scenario that you see, because at the top, I give an anecdote. I did a consultancy assignment for UNDP USA, I did 89. And then I went on a Fulbright fellowship to USA. And then I worked 1 year in Jordan and I came back in 91. UNDP contacted me to ask me to review what happened to that recommendations of USA the study. And that is called Public Administration Efficiency Study. That is the pioneering work which I headed for 6 months. It's a 5-volume report.
When was that finished?
89. It started in May 89. It finished in November. So it was a 6-month study, intensive. I took leave from the university. It was a full-time consultancy. So UNDP wanted to know what happened to that. And if you read this, the mechanism that they devised, that it at each and every stage we had to consult with the civil servants, top civil servants, showed them the findings, the recommendations. Even after that, when I talked to the additional secretary at that time, 91, and it was September 91, I remember, and then he was saying, who was also happened to be one of the persons with whom we contacted regularly, this recommendation was not accepted for this reason, that reason, all excuses. I told him, but you were there. You also approved. And we also moderated our tone. Even then you couldn't do it. And so main thing is, unless you thoroughly recast the bureaucracy first, in terms of personnel, unless you could put in reform-minded bureaucrats at the top, nothing is going to happen. And I would still suggest that there should be a permanent reform commission attached to the Prime Minister's office. And it should be headed by an academic like me, not by a civil servant. If you put a civil servant in charge, nothing is going to move anywhere. And yes, there should be members. There should be members of that from the civil service, higher, very senior level civil servants like secretaries, top NGO people, business people. Because in Bangladesh, we cannot afford to ignore them. We cannot afford to ignore the private sector. We cannot afford to ignore the civil society segments. We need to bring them together. And we need to continuously, first we need to do, if there's a permanent administrative reform commission located in the Prime Minister's office, we need to first assess what has happened to all the reforms in concrete terms. How many recommendations have been implemented, to what extent? Number two, then we devise what is called implementation strategies, how this could be done. Whether we go segmented approach, holistic approach, whatever it is. And then thirdly, we draw up plans and then tell the government that these are the action plans you need to follow. Otherwise, there is no chance. No chance, no way you can do it. Anything else?
Well, I'd like to know about the relationship between politicians and senior civil servants.
It's very cozy.
Some people have said that the civil servants don't want to do reform, that they
don't,
that they stop reforms from happening. Others have said that the politicians have no interest in doing reform.
None.
Themselves. So what happens to any of the reform processes? Why do politicians not want to do reforms?
You see, politicians are not interested because they don't want to change the system. They are very comfortable with it. You have to understand the reality. They are not interested in administration. They don't want to know about it. They'll always be busy with other things. If they are politicians in the sense that we have now, they are more interested to track their constituency interests, broadly. They are not interested in the reform of the civil service. And civil servants take full advantage of that situation. They tell the minister, sir, you need not worry, I will get my things done. That means, you have to understand, we don't have a person like Mahathir Mohamad here. We don't have a Lee Kuan Yew. They don't have any visions. None of the leaders have any visions for future. They're talking about digital Bangladesh. I'm sure they don't know what they're talking about, frankly speaking. Now, you need visionary leaders at the political level who would be ruthless, Unless you have vision, there will be no mission. No vision, no mission, no action. You can quote me on that.
So it seems that all the reform commissions, the Duran Nabi Committee, the Park, were all run by
bureaucrats.
Bureaucrats, and all of them suggested sweeping reforms.
Yeah, but you have to remember, when they were doing it, they were retired civil servants. When they were in the civil service, they all opposed.
So how does that work? Why?
Because, you know, they wanted to give a nice image to the people that, you know, yeah, I want reform. Because he knows he will not now be affected. You start with 1972, Professor Muzaffar Chaudhry's Administrative Reform Committee, which came out with very big reforms, and all of them were opposed by these people. At that time, they were maybe deputy secretaries, the two persons that you mentioned by name. I know both of them. One is Nur Nabi Chaudhry, and another is Shamsul Haq, the chairman of PARC. Because, you know, at that, when they were chairman or this committee and PARC, they basically, one already retired in politics, failed to become a member from his area. So he was given a plum posting with the rank and status of a state minister. So he was using that as a big office. I know him. And Nur Nabi Chaudhry is a person who was basically also retired. He was given an appointment with a car and all that, so he could come to the office. He was doing that. Their nature never changed. So don't start from there. Start from the beginning. Administrative Reorganization Committee, which I talked thoroughly. Because if these recommendations would have been accepted, there would be tremendous change in the administrative system and ethos of Bangladesh, and would have developed much further and much more. We have not developed because we do not have. You see, the problem is private investment is not coming. This is main reason is not political. It's main because the administrative system that we have. They want to control everything. All their premises are wrong, because government should be limited. Only basic essential services people should go to the government. They don't understand that. So there should be more public-private third sector partnership. There should be drastic and thorough reform. I have already included that, and you can look at another book which is coming out in March called From Government to Governance. This would come out brought out by South Asian publishers in New Delhi. I'm sure they have a worldwide network. And for Bangladesh, UPL will do it. And the subtitle is Expanding the Horizon of Public Administration to Public Management. There I talk about the Southeast Asian experience, I talk about Bangladesh experience, what has happened in terms of, more broadly, governance. Why things have gone this way. What role corruption has played. Why mismanagement has cost so much. But ultimately you have to understand, and then there is a book. If you are more interested, I can ask you. This book was published from USA. There I talk about reform resistance in public administration. So if you contact me, I will give you the details of that. And one book you can look at, it may help you, is there is a book published by UPL called Development Dialogue something. Let me bring it to you and show it to you. Maybe I give it to you, because if I do it, let me take it out.
We can do. Should we do it after the interview?
Oh, sorry. Yes.
I'll
give it to you. Yeah. Better.
But the politicians after each election seem to produce these or set up these reform commissions.
Yeah, they do.
Why is that the case if there's no intention of
just to show that they are reform minded, and to accommodate some of their allies in the civil service. Shamsul Haq, in fact, lost election, parliament election from Kumilla, his constituency. So Sheikh Hasina wanted to give him something. Nur Nabi Chaudhry is a trusted ally of Begum Khalida Zia. She gave him this chairmanship. So this is a kind of a plum offers they give you for your loyalty and service, not to the country, to her. Okay. So you have to understand that. And when they call announce committees, because people expect reforms. So they say, yes, I have appointed this committee. But committees have produced reports all right, recommendations all right, but nothing has happened.
And what do you think of the recommendations that the committees have
made? Most of them are very, I think, sound, based on facts, figures, very appropriate. And this is the reason why they were not implemented.
So the reports are generally good.
Of course. Of course. That's why they are not implemented. That's why they are more always interested in small changes here and there. They pick up that what would be the size of paper. Who the hell cares what is the size of the paper? These are all very minimal, not only minimal, you know, the redundant recommendations of some of these committees and commissions. So they picked up those, not the substantive ones. For example, most of the committees recommended, starting from Muzaffar Chaudhry, that you have a unified civil service system so that promotion is open, so that you can bring in people from outside. None of the governments accepted that recommendation. And you will be surprised to know that from 1972 till 1977 or 78, there were two or three major reform efforts. And most of the reform committees, commissions, recommendations were not even made public. Not even made public. So what do you think? What is the rationale? So that you need to understand why things have not changed.
So it seems as though even recently, the public service doesn't even need to resist the reforms because the reforms are never attempted.
Yeah, they're never attempted because the reason is the civil servants themselves resisted, because when reform bodies make recommendations, you have to understand the process. The government sends it to a committee consisting of all civil servants to study the feasibility of the implementation. They all say,
so this is another committee after the committee?
Yes, yes. Okay. And they always say that these are not possible for this reason, this will be disruptive, this will be financially burdensome, these, that. True.
Are those reports publicly available?
No. You'll never be able to see them anyway. I saw some of this because I had some connections in this Ministry of Establishment, but you'll not be able to see any of them. They'll not show you.
So is there space for... It seems obvious that many of the senior civil servants must realize that there are needed reforms. Is there space for a secretary in a ministry to try and implement reforms himself?
No, you see, I think your assumption is not correct. They don't realize it. They realize it only after they retire from the civil service so they can become consultants, giving the donors the impression that I was secretary for so many years, I'm in the civil service, I know everything about civil, you know, civil service needs change. I always ask them, why didn't you do it when you were in the civil service? Why did you resist changes? So what you're saying is not correct. They may talk about reform, because when they're either nearing retirement or they have only two or three more years service left, they talk about, yes, services should be reformed. They write newspaper columns. I don't want to mention their names, but you know, they're quite well known. When you go and sit in a dialogue, they're all pro-reform. Then who is obstructing reform? I'm not, certainly, because I'm not in the civil service, not even near power. So who is obstructing? If they are not obstructing, the politicians are not obstructing, then who are obstructing reforms? Tell me.
So in 2003, a new training program was was created. Mm. What's come of that?
Nothing. The same thing. What is new?
So who?
And they came out with a national training policy too.
Who came out with that?
You see, I said nothing came out of that.
Who produced the training policy?
You see, the training policy was produced by a gentleman called Kamal Siddiqui, who was principal secretary to the Prime Minister. In fact, it was done under his direction. There were others involved. But then you have to understand that we don't have the right type of training institutions. We do not have the right type of personnel, logistic support. Also, the intention is not there. It was said that, you know, all civil servants must be trained before they are... must undergo training before they are promoted. But then you talk to civil training institutes, they said, we don't have the capacity. So how can we implement that? And in some cases, your ministry or department will not release you for training. So you're not trained anyway.
Are there any training needs assessment done?
I did it long time ago, 1998, for Asian Development Bank. I forgot what was there. But we found out that there was a desperate gap between the requirements of the job and the way they were trained. In fact, I studied all the training institutions, both in the public sector. It says I did the job for the Asian Development Bank.
And what happened with that report?
Nothing.
Who was it submitted to?
It was submitted, our job was to submit it, both a copy to the Secretary, Minister of Establishment, as well as to the resident representative. Asian Development Bank. But then after that, we were never consulted. That is, I was never asked to do anything. So you can understand what happened.
Yeah. So I understand a number of salary increases have happened in the last 10 or so years. Is this true within the civil service?
Not much. Very minimal. I think they are all wrong in that, because I always believe that you must pay civil service for performance. You should not. There should not be automatic pay rise. But what they have done, they have made some increase in pay across the board, which is a little use. Because if I'm not performing, I'm also getting pay raise. You are performing, you're getting. So you have no motivation anyway. You will not do much.
And what I've come across the public administration sector survey.
By the UNDP, yes.
That was carried out by the UNDP.
Yeah.
When was that done?
It was done in 1993-94.
And was that done in conjunction with the Ministry of Establishment?
Yes. And they simply flatly rejected the report.
And what were the conclusions of the report?
The conclusions were there should be changes. If you read my book, it's all there. That there should be changes in the training, the way they should be recruited. It should be based on merit. All the committees and commissions say basically the same thing. Tenor is same. You know, there may be changes in terms of the contents, but the tenor is very same. It was flatly rejected.
So how do you think you could get around this resistance to reform or unwillingness to do reform?
You can get around. It's very difficult. Number one, as I already told you, that you have to first clean the top of the bureaucracy. You have to remove most of the secretaries, additional secretaries, send them on voluntary retirement, forced retirement, not voluntary, or make some of them OSDs, officers of special duty. Then you're bringing about people through screening who are reform-oriented. If you look at the service record, you can find that.
But who would be willing to do that?
The present government should do it, because it's going for talking about change, all big things. You know, what is the manifestation of that? We'd like to see. Second is, of course, there should be a permanent reform commission attached to the Prime Minister's office, headed by an academic practitioner, composed of, as I already told. The third is, of course, there should be constant government support to that commission, so that it undertakes studies and then has the power to implement. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to happen anymore.
Are you familiar with the MAT-2 project?
Of course I am.
As I understand it, it is trying to compel the Ministry of Establishment to introduce some performance management and human resources policies.
But it has not happened.
By offering them these trainings.
So yes.
How do you think a project like that could work?
It will never work, because you see, our civil servants are very interested to go abroad for two purposes, not to learn. To save some money and bring a car and refrigerator. Let me be very blunt. I told about defeat chief, that is not going to work.
So you don't think that could compel the...
No. Why should it compel? Can you force them out? You can't. So what they did is they took younger level civil servants, took them to certain universities in UK, and in the bargain they got also MA or MS degrees. I know about the program. MAT 1, MAT 2, both. There was one MAT 1 initially. But I don't know, maybe I'm now more disillusioned than I should be. I have not seen any result. But why should I be enthusiastic? Tell me.
And what was the four secretaries committee?
These were four secretaries, all members of the erstwhile Civil Service of Pakistan. Members like Kamal Siddiqui and all. And they have not done much. They came out with a report, it's a general report.
When was
this? It was 1993, I think. They came out with a report, and they were funded by DFID. At that time, it was at a different name. And they were given a tour of UK. On the basis of that, they wrote a report, what should be done, time management, this, that. But all this you will get in my book. If you read this book of mine, these are all there. If you just look at them, you'll find out yourself What were their intentions? It's a good visit.
So I understand that the new Regulatory Reforms Commission has been established along with a Better Business Commission under pressure from the private sector?
Yes, private sector and donors, both.
So do you think the private sector and donors could form a pressure group to compel
And I think they should. But the Regulatory Reform Commission has done some work in the sense of, you know, simplifying certain rules and regulations. But to what extent government has accepted those is another question. I know the chairman of that commission very well. I know other members. I know also Better Business Bureau you're talking about. But it meets very rarely. Very rarely. So you can't expect much.
But do you think it's a start of
it's a start.
greater pressure from different sectors?
Yeah, but you know, you have to go in a very much more comprehensive way. This is a very, you know, ad hoc, you know, sort of a one step. Not, you know, joined in, because, you know, Regulatory Reform Commission is here, then this Business Council is here, but then there is no bridge between the two. There must be a kind of holistic system within which it may work. Okay? Anything else?
Do you have anything else to add?
No. In fact, I have to run.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much for your interview.